Do you love to talk about rescue dogs almost too much? Us too. This is why I created a space where we can celebrate it. This podcast is for those who are passionate about rescue because dogs, whether they're a foster or a new member of your family, they rescue us right back. Each week, we invite a member of the dog rescue community to talk about their passion for rescue dogs and how their life has never been the same. This is Rescue Dog Love, a rescue community podcast. I'm Yamini, and this is my first rescue, Bus. Hello, rescue dog lovers of the internet. Happy Rescue Dog Love Sunday. Sunday is my favorite self-care day, so I'm happy to share with you the ultimate dog mom, dog dad, dog lover self-care listen. I had an amazing chat with Caroline from Dog Mom Mentality, and that's what we're going to listen to today. Dog Mom Mentality is an Instagram page, a great shop with some amazing inspirational pet gear and pet parent gear. I personally love my bad dog mom shirt. And she has a podcast all about the intersection of mental health and dog ownership. So in the podcast today, Caroline and I have a great deep chat about all the ways that our love for our dogs affects our mental health. And most importantly, how we can tackle it. Plus, if you listen to the end of the podcast, you will hear a special discount code for her shop. If you do enjoy this podcast today, I would love if you could leave an Apple review or give us a rating on Spotify. You are all the absolute best. Thank you and enjoy. Hey, Caroline. Welcome to Rescue Dog Love.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
But, oh my God, I didn't even notice that Layla has the cutest tie-dye little jacket on in the background. Yes. I'm dying.
Yep. She has her sweatshirt on because it's been a little chilly.
Yeah.
And it is so cute. It's tie-dye. There is a human version, but I didn't get the human version of it for myself. And now I always regret it.
It's funny because I have a tie-dye, like an oversized tie-dye shirt. So like I could coordinate with her, but I don't know if that would really work. I gave a little visual preview to everyone listening. So maybe we can get into Layla a little bit. I always like to start the podcast just by having a gush fest. Perfect. I'd love to hear a little bit about Layla.
Oh my gosh. So she, I guess like the standard rundown, she's 3 years old. Her gotcha day is actually coming up in 2 weeks, I think. And she is an Aussie mix. So she's about 50% Aussie. The other 50% is a mix of herding breeds and super mutt and boxer randomly, but mostly herding breeds. So she's definitely a herding breed through and through. She has like all of those kind of characteristics. Very playful. That's probably the adjective I mostly describe her as playful. And she's also very determined. So she's very like headstrong. She can get a little like, she's not scared to like test the boundaries a little bit to figure out like what's going to happen if she does something. Sometimes a lot of people say that and they're talking about, you know, testing the boundaries of going against mom or pulling or whatever. But like, I'm talking about even whenever we are doing like confidence building exercises and like, you know, I'm having her like walk on tires or we're at a playground. Like she's not scared to like go headfirst into trying something new out or like trying to walk across, you know, a different kind of platform or material, whatever it is. So she's very like headstrong, willing to test the boundaries, very brave whenever she's not scared. But whenever she is scared, it comes on very quickly. Her fear escalates from like 0 to 100 real quick. And so, you know, we've done a lot of confidence building, a lot of desensitization to different sounds, a lot of like exposing her to various things to kind of overcome some of those fears. One of them being the skateboard. That's probably her biggest fear at one point was skateboards in general. And then it kind of went on to anything that rolled like a skateboard. Luckily, that's all good now. But any other time, you know, she is the bravest little dog. Yeah, she's fun. She's a character. Yeah. So I talked a little bit about some of her fear stuff. So she's a flight risk. She's not really a fighter. So I do group her into or label her as a reactive dog, but it's not the barking, lunging type of thing. It's more of if she gets scared, she runs in the opposite direction or she like runs in whatever way she thinks home is. And so that has been our experience with reactivity for the most part. She's pretty either like neutral or social with dogs, which is nice, because I think whenever you tell somebody that you have a reactive dog, most of the time it's like, oh, your dog like is barking, lunging, you know, maybe aggression, whatever. But no, she's a very social dog. And so that has been, I guess, kind of a, like a positive and a negative, because especially whenever we have done some like desensitization and confidence building and training, if she sees that another dog is there and acting fine, she catches on to that.
That's good at least, because yeah. It definitely makes things easier. But at the same time, how unexpected is it to like see a skateboard come by?
Exactly.
Like you can't, with a dog, you can like look in the distance and like kind of plan out your route,
exactly.
Or just like be like, oh, at this time, right. No one's going to be out.
It was a lot. So, you know, for, I would say like at least 6 months, kind of at like the beginning of our journey, we weren't even walking off of our street because it was just so scary for her. I remember this time that we were walking off of our street and we did so happen run into a skateboarder, which there is a skate park about half a mile, maybe 3/4 of a mile away from our house. So it's like not that uncommon for us to see skateboarders, especially in the summer, you know, so it's like pretty common that we'd just be walking around our neighborhood and see a skateboarder. But it was the summer, maybe fall, like right before she turned one, like a few months before she turned one, we were out walking and we saw a skateboarder and she had like that flight response. And I felt like she was having like a panic attack, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It was like so intense. And at that time we were kind of just coexisting together. We weren't super friendly with each other, believe it or not. It was like the first time that I felt like I ever really connected with her was by her going through that like fear response and feeling like she was having a panic attack. And I was like, oh my gosh, I know like how you feel. I know what that feels like, because I've had panic attacks and like I have anxiety.
And you like recognized it as that, probably because you recognized it in yourself as someone who also has anxiety. Like I remember the first time like my friend had an anxiety attack and none of us knew what was going on. With a dog, a lot of people react the same way. They're just like, what's my dog doing?
Like, exactly. Like it was like scary and overwhelming. And I just remember like at that time, I had like no idea what reactivity was, what kind of like training I should do. So I just was like, okay, we are just like never walking off of our street ever again. And that was kind of our life for like 6 months. Around her first birthdays was when we really started to get into training and building our relationship and all that fun stuff.
So you were saying you didn't really have like a bond with her to start.
Me and my husband have been together for a very long time. And he was like, I want to get a dog. So I was like, okay, we'll like get a dog together. But she was going to stay at his house because we were still in college. She was going to be more of his like responsibility. And I was just going to be like the fun parent with like puppy pics.
Yeah.
This was in February of 2020. So right before the pandemic. And then the pandemic hit. We actually, all three of us lived together for a couple months in my mom's house. And she was just like very puppy stages. You know, there wasn't a whole lot. Like we, you know, would take her on walks and then we would like teach her cute tricks, but like that was it. And then we started living in the house that we currently live in that we rent. And my husband started to travel for work and I was working from home. And so that was whenever I started to have more responsibility over her, but she would only listen to my husband and I would get frustrated with that. And I was like, you know, I don't really like care for dogs anyways, believe it or not. Like I was not that big of a dog person. It was kind of just like we were coexisting.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how our relationship was until I was determined to start training her after her first birthday.
Oh my gosh. What a transformation now. Like literally the opposite. That's interesting. Yeah. How is her relationship with your husband now? Like how is the dynamic changed?
Not with him.
No.
Not with him.
Still,
yeah.
Is he still number one?
No. Okay. No. But like, you know, she's still very much like a daddy's girl. But I think like what it was that we had like no relationship. And then now we have like such a big relationship together. together and big bond together that it's like complete 180. It's like crazy to think about sometimes. I remember the first time that we were out front of our house and we were training and we were just like working on heel or something like very basic. I remember my husband came out and she like decided to stay with me. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like the first time that she's ever decided to like stay with me. Cause typically she would have gone like straight to my husband, like regardless of if, you know, I had her in a command or obedience or anything. And like, I remember that moment so specifically because I was like, this is the first time that she's ever like chosen me over you. And it's wild. And it's not like I want her to choose me over you. It's not like a competition, but it was just like such a special moment for me because I felt like in that it like really solidified that like we were on the right path.
And I mean, that's like what you want out of training at the end of the day too, is that your bond is like solid enough that like, hey, you can see your dad in like 2 minutes.
Right.
Like it's okay. My first rescue also, I mean, he's obsessed with my partner. Like he is all over him all the time. But my partner actually, he's Australian. So he's been back home for like almost 2 months. He just got back. Wow. And it was so interesting shifting, like him just having me and only me and kind of the same thing. Like,
yeah, I totally understand that because my husband travels for work sometimes. So he'll be gone for like a week or two. And it is always like a big transition to go from him and I to just me and then back. It's kind of like we get on this little routine of me and her together. And then, you know, it does shift a little bit in what she's able to do during the day. And, you know, whenever he is here during the day, he has more free time. So he does stuff with her, like while I work upstairs, and just the whole dynamic is so different whenever it goes from like solo to both, basically.
Do you find that she like is okay with the transition now? Was it hard to start it off?
The first time, I remember she took it very, very hard. I remember like this, because this was whenever we didn't have that great of bond. And I just remember her being like very mopey and laying a lot. And like, you know how sometimes people say like their dogs get depressed whenever, you know, the whoever leaves, whenever a parent or, you know, both parents leave and the dog's with the grandparents, whatever. Like, I definitely remember her being like that. And now it's doesn't really affect her. It's happened enough times that I think like she I don't want to say understands it, but you know, it's not like she knows that he's going to come back. Whereas that first time she probably was like, where the heck is my dad? And is he coming back?
I think also she's like, okay, mom's got this. We're fine.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I will say like whenever it's just her and I, our days, like I will structure more of my day around her. And so, you know, we're probably going on more hikes or more walks or different walks. I will definitely structure our day a little bit more like to do things with her, if that makes sense.
Which I'm sure she loves.
Yeah. Things that we normally wouldn't do, basically.
Yeah. And then she's like, oh, I get this extra little treat when dad's gone. It's not too bad. All right. Well, let's talk about the transformation you had from not really a dog person,
right,
to dog mom mentality.
Right.
Basically, you know, spending tons of time, not only with Layla and building that relationship, but then documenting it and putting it out there. Tell me that journey. How did it start?
Yeah. So I basically have already disclosed, you know, I wasn't really a dog person. Not that like I hated dogs, but like, I don't know. I just wasn't really into them. I had a dog growing up. It was a pet dog. And whenever we got her, so she's actually from Craigslist, and I probably would not go down that route again, but you know, here we are. And we knew that she was going to be an Aussie, but we were told she was going to be a miniature Aussie, and she's like 60 pounds now. So she's not a miniature Aussie at all. But at the time I thought, well, my mom's boyfriend has an Australian Shepherd and she's awesome. She's like the best dog ever. So I was like, okay, this is going to be great. Like we are going to have such a good dog because my mom's boyfriend's dog is such a good dog and it's going to be awesome. So then, you know, we kind of got into the stage of like COVID stage, basically, where we were all three kind of together. There wasn't really a whole lot of socialization for her. It was kind of just like doing like the bare minimum type of stuff. And I just wasn't really like present as a dog owner or like into it. Going back and like thinking about it, like I wasn't really present in a lot of areas in my life. There were like a lot of things at that time period giving me a lot of anxiety and stress. Like not only was it COVID, but we had a really terrible landlord at the time that was giving us a lot of hardship and stress. And, you know, I had just graduated college and I was starting a job for the first time and my husband was starting.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of transition.
Right.
And when you have a landlord who sucks, you literally don't feel at home in your own house. So
exactly.
Feel that.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff. You know, my mom was living a plane ride away for the first time in my whole life. And, you know, I felt like I couldn't get to her if I really needed to. And yeah, there were just like so many transitions. And so I was under a lot of like stress and anxiety anyways. And then Layla started to show these signs of fear of like, you know, not walking off of our street and sounds and sights and just like very on edge. 24/7. Like that's how I would like describe her, was just on edge. But, you know, kind of going back and thinking about it, like I wasn't doing a whole lot to like fulfill her. Neither of us were, or I shouldn't say neither of us, but like at that time I was like the main one responsible for her because he was traveling for work. And so, you know, she probably wasn't very fulfilled at that time. Like I wouldn't walk her anywhere but our street. And so she probably wasn't getting like the physical exercise that she actually needed. And there was like a whole lot of things like going into play that like, I look back on it and I'm like, okay, there's so many things that I could have done, but you know, whatever, we're in the present now. It really boiled down to though, kind of our breaking point was that we did have a situation with the landlord that I had to shut her into her crate really quick one time. And I was already really anxious. And there was just like a lot of stress. Very soon after that, she started to have aggression whenever we would go to put her up in our crate. And at the time we were like, this is coming out of nowhere. But I feel like looking back, it's so clear to me all these things that like led up to this event. And so she started showing some signs of aggression in her crate and it pretty quickly escalated. We didn't really know like what to do. It wasn't separation anxiety. It was like specifically whenever we were closing the door. And it was like very hurtful because it was like directed at us, at like as her owners. It just like felt very like shameful. And we felt like alone and like we didn't know what to do. And, you know, we were kind of like going through all these different ways to try to help it and fix it and prevent it. You know, we ended up having to have like some really difficult conversations on what do we do with her, because it felt like at the time that I was living in like fight or flight constantly 24/7, because whether it was her or the landlord, like I didn't feel safe in my own house. I was living with her. She was on edge 24/7. I was like terrified to put her in her crate, even though she probably needed to go in there sometimes. And like, it was just this like constant, like, what is going on? Like, I don't have control over anything. And, you know, what ended up really happening though, was like, she picks up on patterns so quick. If she like realized, okay, I go potty before I go to my crate at night, she would start showing signs of aggression. Like whenever we would go to take the leash off of her, like right before she went up to her crate. And like, you know, it was just like this on edge tension 24/7. It was awful.
Boss has like, he has resource guarding issues primarily. Mm-hmm. So for him, it was opening the crate. Like he's loves his crate. And then at one point we would open the door and he would like charge at the door and like, go crazy. And you're just like, how do I fix this? And she's really smart. So she was like anticipating.
Yes. It was awful. Yeah. So we kind of got to that breaking point and we had to figure out like, what do we do? At the time I was like, well, we can't like give a dog away. Like we cannot do that. Like I'm better than that. Like, and I'm not saying that all people should try to like stick it through and try to make it work, because sometimes it's like for your quality of life, like you know, sometimes it's better. But at the time, like my ego was just like, you cannot do that. Like people are going to look at you so bad if you give up on a dog. It sucks to say that, but like, I swear, I think that was the truth, because like we were really, really struggling. So then I just became determined. I was like, we are going to fix this. We are going to figure out what to do. We are going to train every day, 24/7. Like we are going to fix this. And so that kind of started off our training journey. And then, you know, we've been through lots of ups and downs with that, but at that same time, like my anxiety was at its peak. I felt very shameful about a lot of my mental health, all the things going on for various reasons. And I wasn't super open about it. What really happened or started to happen was that I was, you know, sharing cute pictures of Layla on Instagram. And then one day I was like, I think I'm going to like say something on Instagram that like having a dog is hard sometimes. I've learned about this thing called reactivity and like, it sucks and it's really hard. And it was kind of this outlet to start talking about mental health in a way that like was relatable to other people, that people understood, that people weren't going to like shame me for, or call me lazy, or, you know, all of these kind of like stereotypical things that people sometimes associate with mental health and depression and anxiety. And I was like, I'm going to talk about it through this lens. And it worked. Like it made so much sense to people. And like, it made sense to me. It made me feel better. So it was kind of like my journal for a really long time to get my feelings out in that way. And, you know, it started to become very relatable and helped other people as well. So I was like, okay, like this is going to be my thing. So over time, it really developed into me talking about more mental health subjects besides just through the lens of dog ownership. And that's kind of where it's at today.
That's, yeah, quite a story. I feel like it's just like, you, like you said, a relatable experience for a lot of people. I feel like it's not a coincidence either that a lot of like women particularly who have mental health concerns or problems they're working through really do gravitate towards dogs and their space. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of hard because we get told that dogs and like animals are a help
right.
to a lot of these issues. But obviously, like anything, you have to make the change within yourself in order right. to like actually tackle it.
Totally. And like, you know, I say this all the time, but like, I don't think I would have started therapy if Layla wasn't in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think I would have gotten back into like personal development and like learning about psychology and like kind of into this whole realm if it wasn't for Layla, because she kind of forced me into this position to like not only work on her, but work on myself. You know, at first it was like, okay, I need to learn how to, you know, maybe be a little bit more mindful and present with her and like control my anxiety. This was something that I was pretty into as a teenager because a close person in my life was diagnosed with depression and anxiety. And I saw them go through a lot of very much like the stereotypical, like what people thought of them and like their perception of them. I was like, well, I don't want to be like that person because I don't want to be judged in that way. And at the time, like that was what I thought was going to save me. But like, turns out me embracing that side of me is like actually what's saving me now. And so I, you know, I was really into it, more so just like learning about it so I could not have anxiety and depression. You know, now I'm like very accepting of it. I'm very open about it, obviously. I don't think I ever would have come to that conclusion if it weren't for Layla, like getting me back into it and like wanting to work on myself for her. But, you know, now it's just for me and everyone else around me.
How does working with Layla, especially with all of these behavioral concerns that you've like worked through with her through training, like how do you think that reflects on how you've changed your outlook, starting to train and right. having that like light bulb kind of moment of like,
yeah.
oh, this is actually like helping me as much as it's helping her.
Right. Well, I think a lot of it is honestly like very specifically from like the dog reactivity world, because like they talk a lot about like trigger stacking and, you know, not going past threshold and all these things that like you can be sensitive to, and just like this buildup of stuff over time. And I was like, I relate to this. I relate to this. I guess it really started by me thinking like I need to control myself a little bit better so that I can help guide her. And so I started to do some like mindfulness techniques and trying to like ground myself. But honestly, looking back, it was not that big of a help. Like I probably was just trying to fool myself into something. It was probably because like I was doing it just like for a quick fix, not
yeah,
for,
you
like,
were you just wanted results.
Right. And I mean, exactly.
I'm still mindfulness and I we have a rocky relationship. Yeah. It's not my favorite way to like right. deal with my issues. And I feel my therapist says too, she's like, you know, it's the most popular one out there.
Exactly.
It doesn't work for everyone. So
exactly. Yeah. Like at the time I was like, I just like need to do this. So like we can like yeah. fix things quicker. But you know what? Then I really started to relate to like a lot of these dog training things, like trigger stacking. I was like, yeah, like I get that. Like I'm using that in my own life.
We do all the time. Like yeah. we start using the same vocabulary. Right. You're like, oh, I am so trigger stacked once yes. my boss told me to do this.
Yeah, no, totally. And so I started like relating to a lot of those things. And then I just like really started to realize like all these emotions that I felt with her, there was like a lot of different changes in how I like viewed things and like what I thought I wanted that occurred over like this whole time. Like I really had to learn how to like manage highs and lows. And like, I, you know, went through like this whole breadth of like being super high and then 6 months later being super low and depressed and like diagnosed with it. And so like, really just learning how to like feel all of those emotions. So like that you feel them and then like move on. I was definitely really, really bad about holding my emotions and like not mm-hmm. expressing them and then building up over time and then like leading to like a panic or an anxiety attack or whatever. And so learning how to like feel those, process, and then kind of move on. But like, I think the biggest thing that I would say that has probably came over this time is that like, I still feel a lot of the same emotions. It's not like I'm this, it's not like I'm on this constant high of like joy or pleasure or anything with her. Like we still have really bad moments, but I think the difference is that I respond to them so much better. And my recovery time as a human is so much better. Like I, you know, recover from something quickly instead of holding on to it forever. And my response to it is more appropriate instead of like just lashing out or, you know, getting really angry or like having to isolate. Like isolate was like a big thing for me. And like just communicating, this is how I feel. This is how I'm going to go deal with it real quick. And then I'll be back. And I think like that's probably like the biggest shift is my like response and recovery time.
Yeah. That it, I can, again, relate so hard. I feel like that's when you know things are working. It's not right. that the emotions disappear. It's not exactly. like you're happy all the time. It's that you have like a really intense emotional moment and now you know how to like process it and deal with it.
Totally.
And like, be in it enough. But also like, I know for me, it's like if I'm pissed off about something that my dog is done, now I know to walk away, feel my emotion, and realize it's not a big deal and move on. And mm-hmm. it's just like, okay, now I can go back. And now I'm not putting that on them.
Right.
When it's not necessary. I love that you kind of brand yourself as like recovering perfectionist.
Yeah.
How do you feel like you've changed your approach to dog ownership? Like, I assume that was part of maybe how you started your training journey.
Yes.
That was totally me too. Or like we yes. discussed with like meditation. You're like, I will meditate every day for 10 minutes. And mm-hmm. if I do it every day, I will like, be a perfect person.
Right. Yeah, totally. So the way that it came out was that I have always been very like disciplined and driven and like, I will go until it's done. And so with Layla, it felt like she was this extension of me. Like she like represented me, you know what I mean? And so like, if she was quote unquote, like a bad dog, you know, which is how some reactive dogs get labeled. But like, if she was like a bad dog, then I was a bad owner. Right. And I like hated that. I hated it. It made me cringe so much. Like what really started happening is that I would be like, okay, we need to do this list of like 10 things. Like we have to like, you know, overcome these 10 things. Like you have to learn these skills and you have to overcome this and you have to not be scared of skateboards and like all of, you know, all the things. I basically would like in like a training session, I would be like, okay, we can do like one more rep. Okay. One more rep. Like we have to get it perfect. Like we have to keep going until we get it perfect. And that would put a lot of pressure on her and me. Or like, you know, if we were walking, I would be like, oh, let's purposefully walk by the dog so we can like prove that we are a good dog and a good owner. And it was just like this constant sense of like putting pressure on both of us. And like, yes, I might be able to take the pressure, but like, I can't speak for her. It definitely caused like some frustration because if she didn't, you know, have the outcome that I was expecting, I would get frustrated and I would get irritated. And then, you know, I would either like not want anything to do with her, or I would put even more pressure on us to keep going until we got it right. And like, that's just not fair to her. It really was just like this pressure that I kept putting on us to be perfect, societal standards of perfect, right? And I wasn't really doing anything for us or like me. It was more like about pleasing the outside world. And so really like recovering perfectionist and recovering people pleaser kind of go hand in hand there, because the reason I wanted to be perfect was to please society or please other people. But like really those kind of go hand in hand for me. And so, yeah, it definitely caused some tension between us at times. It definitely caused some trust to be broken between us at times, because I was putting her in situations that like probably weren't the best. And like, yes, we made it through, but at the time, like it was unfair of me to put her in those situations. Just through learning more about myself, like this was probably it. It was like, I learned so much about myself by going to therapy and starting to do some work on myself and like realizing, okay, like I am a perfectionist. I am a people pleaser, and starting to learn like, okay, I do this because I think I should, or this person told me I should, or this is how society wants it to be, and not for myself. And, you know, maybe not for my dog either. And so like learning that about myself was kind of like the turning point of me being able to take some of that pressure off of us, you know, kind of get past always being perfect or always like doing things because that's what society wants in a dog. Now, unfortunately, that was kind of like after a whole year. So like I went a whole year of like putting a ton of pressure on us, maybe not a whole year, but like probably pretty close to it. Like we made a lot of progress, but I look back on it and I'm like, whoa, like I put us through probably a lot more than what we should have been going through. Like,
yeah, like just adding kind of like that unnecessary pressure. Like it's always good to like push your boundaries a little and like, you know, the threshold thing that we were just discussing, that's like a topic in dog training. But like, it is funny that whole like, it's like, yeah, proving that your dog is not reactive by putting them in situations like,
exactly.
It is really common in dog training. Mm-hmm. Sure. And you know, like sitting in a skateboard park and like doing that desensitization. And that's really helpful and great. But sometimes I think what I'm trying to learn too, which is like so therapy minded, is like accept yourself and accept the dog in front of you. They're just not going to be happy all the time.
Yeah. And I'm like a very 0 to 100 person as well. And so it's either like, okay, I'm doing it or I don't give a shit at all. So it was like for Layla, it was like, okay, I do care. And I care a lot. And like, we're going to make it through. And like, I'm really determined. And so like, I will put us, you know, I will do anything to make sure that we like overcome this. I didn't have very much balance in my life. And so that has kind of been a theme that I've commonly come back to, is like finding this balance of, you know, whether it be structure and time for her to just be a dog, or how much I put pressure on us to like try to overcome something or try to learn something new versus like knowing when to stop, you know, even just like in my own daily life, like, okay, trying to find this balance of like, how much time do I work? How much time do I spend on dog mom mentality? How much time do I just sit down and read? Like, you know what I mean? It's just like this balance of things. And once you realize it in one point, i.e. for me, for like dog training, you start to realize that like, you don't have balance anywhere in your life. It's kind of like just opening up this big can of worms.
I mean, I think balance is like, yeah, like, you know, if you're never just going to have a straight line, it's going to be like this. And hopefully you are okay with the way that it's swinging, or you're like feeling like you're along for the ride. It's also interesting with just what you're saying about like that 0 to 100. Because I think with that type of like perfectionism just comes either this like all-in approach, or if you have any small failure, it completely destroys you. And
totally.
Then you're like in the black, you're not doing anything, you're whatever.
100%.
So it's definitely a cycle that I think makes sense that a lot of people relate to it. I also wanted to talk about the world expects a lot out of dogs. Like we live in a society where, especially after COVID, dogs are everywhere. Everyone owns one. And we expect a lot of behavior from these animals that are literally carnivores that, you know, we domesticated them, but like they're still animals. You mentioned about like overcoming these like limiting beliefs and like the world, like, you know, these ideas of the world around you. Like, how do you put those boundaries up? How do you remind yourself of what's real and what's just like told to you as like something you should be doing?
I hate the word should. I hate it. There are so many times without my or throughout my day that I'm just like, I should do that. Oh, I should do that. Oh, somebody, so-and-so would probably like really like it if I did this. I should do that for them. And oh my gosh, it's just every time that I hear that thought in my head or a phrase in my head with the word should in it. Oh my gosh. I just want to like, I need to go on a walk. I get so flustered now. I'm like, get out of my head. Get this word out of my head. It's a bad word.
It is a bad word.
Yeah. But, you know, just kind of like determining, and this has been, you know, a process in itself, but like determining like, what do I actually think is like right and wrong? What actually works for us? Like, what do we actually need in our life to function and have like a fulfilling, enjoyable life? Like getting really nitty gritty of like what you want is hard. Because you do have so many of these things like coming in, like generationally passed down, and you know, your friend does this way, and you see somebody else on Instagram doing it this way.
I was gonna say, Instagram,
all of this,
dog Instagram is
right.
I think a huge, like, it's a great community, but it's also like stressful.
Totally. Yes, 100%. And like, I think the hardest part about it is like sitting with yourself long enough to figure it out. It's so easy nowadays to like get somebody else's opinion, either from asking it or just because, you know, people put it all over social media. But it's really hard to like just sit there with your own thoughts and feelings and like figure it out yourself. Like, it's uncomfortable, especially whenever you're first starting. And I think that's like the hardest part, but it's like crucial for you to figure out like what you actually need to do or want to do, or like what do you actually want with your dog. There were so many times that I just like wanted Layla to learn stuff just because all my friends on Instagram also had it or also did it with their dog. And turns out like it does not matter if Layla can do that or not. I barely use that now. You know what I mean? It's a slippery slope for sure. Trying to figure out, you know, looking at everything on Instagram and trying to figure out like, is that something that I should actually do with my dog or teach my dog or have that experience with my dog. I feel like dog sports are really popular right now. I feel like I'm seeing a lot of people start dog sports, and which is great, totally. But I'm sure there's a handful of people out there that are starting a dog sport because they saw everyone else do it on Instagram. Their dog probably hates it. But like, they're still in it because they want to be like everyone else on Instagram.
And every dog is so different. Like, funnily enough, we're starting agility training this weekend for Boss, who just based on his personality, he is happiest when he's doing something. He's just like really, he's really likes training for that reason. I think he just needs an outlet. But then my other dog, Queenie, like she barely knows sit. Like, she barely has recall because she just wants to lay around.
Right.
And do nothing. And
that's her lifestyle.
That's her lifestyle. She doesn't bother us. Like, honestly, there's probably things that I could do to, you know, make her do this, make her do that. But I just feel like she's such a happy dog. And I'm like, why, you know, why do I have to compare her to Boss, who loves learning and loves doing things, when she's just like, no, I would just like to cuddle and then go back to sleep. That's my life.
I always think about that. Like, if we get another dog, how things will just be so much different, because like, you could even get the same breed of dog and their personalities be totally opposite.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, do I relearn how to like teach some things in a different way? Like, you know, am I going to get confused with my hand placement? But then even just like from ownership and kind of teaching them standpoint, this dog might be super sensitive to my voice. Layla's not sensitive to my voice at all. I mean, she is a little bit, but like, it's really not like other dogs.
Yeah.
And I always think about that. Like, what if this other dog that we get is really sensitive to my voice? Like, I'm going to have to really pay attention to that if so. Or, you know, what if this dog has separation anxiety? That's nothing that I've never experienced that before. And I always think about that. Like how getting another dog could just be like totally throw me for a loop.
Could be the opposite. I'd dog sat before, boss was like came into our life, and all of a sudden we were just like, whoa, it is hard to handle this dog. And he's like a Chihuahua mix. Like I had no idea he was going to like be so freaking crazy. And like, I swear he has like a working dog brain in a Chihuahua body. But then when we got our second Chihuahua mix, she's like the opposite. It was kind of like, oh, this is much easier.
Right.
But then it's hard. I'm like, maybe it just feels easier because I've already done it.
True. Yeah. That's one thing that I've thought about going kind of back to like the perfectionist thing. I've always, you know, in my head been like, whenever we get a second dog, I'm going to do everything right. I'm going to socialize them. I'm going to do all of the steps. I know so much more. I'm going to be like, just such a better like puppy owner. And like, I'm just going to do everything perfect. And then in the back of my head, I'm like, Caroline, you can't think like that. You shouldn't expect that. Like, what if something happens? Like, you might be setting yourself up for failure by telling yourself that you're going to do everything perfect. It's going to be so easy. And then one thing just throws you for a loop.
Yeah. Queenie was perfect for, she is still perfect, but I've had her just a year in November. I swear January 1st happened. And now she does this, like, if I correct her or boss with like too negative a tone, she starts barking at me and won't stop.
Wow.
So this is like a brand new thing that she's just decided to start doing a year into having her.
Yeah. Sometimes you're just like, oh, you dogs just are always going to surprise me a little
exactly.
bit.
Exactly. So you can't really think you can expect anything. What are like the best takeaways that you would give to someone?
There's two things that really come to mind that have been like at the top of my head, actually three things. I'm going to sit here and be like, actually five things, actually 10 things, actually 15. No, there's three, and I'll limit myself at that. One is to prioritize yourself as much as you prioritize your dog, because you can't give them everything that they need if you're not well rested and taken care of and fed and all of that stuff fulfilled. You know what I mean? Like, we talk so much about fulfilling our dogs. Fulfill yourself. That's hard to do. Sometimes I tell people, I'm like, do it for your dog. Do it for your dog. Eventually you'll realize that you like it, like doing it for yourself, and then you can do it for yourself. But if saying like, I'm doing this for my dog is what gets you into it, so be it. The second thing is just like, what are you besides a dog mom? I feel like we get so caught up in like dog mom, everything revolves around my dog. And then all of a sudden somebody's like, what else do you like? And you're like, I don't know.
What was my life before this?
I don't remember. Yeah. So that kind of goes like hand in hand with like prioritizing yourself. The third one is getting to know yourself. And this is like probably not talked about enough. I probably don't talk about it enough, but it's like this big realization that I've just came to pretty recently. And it's like, the more that you know about yourself, whether it be through like therapy or journaling or just like sitting with yourself or having a realization, an aha moment, whatever, the more you know about yourself, the more that you are able to like, one, communicate it, you know, whether it be to your partner or a friend, but like, maybe you just know, like, I'm about to get really frustrated with your dog, with yourself. Like, you feel it coming. That's knowing yourself. You know that you're about to have this emotion. So you step back. Okay, great. Like, you were able to like save yourself from yelling at your dog or overcorrecting or whatever it is. But you know, just like, there's so many things that like I've learned about myself. Like, I learned that I am a perfectionist. I learned that I am a people pleaser. I learned that I do have a really hard time setting boundaries. And like, because I know that about myself now, I can go into things, be more proactive. The more that you can set yourself up for success goes along with prioritizing yourself as well. It really all ties back into just like taking care of yourself and learning about yourself and knowing yourself and knowing your emotions. And part of that is sitting with your emotions sometimes, but that leads into being able to give back to your dog more, give back to your partner more, be able to take care of other people and, you know, making sure that your responses are fair and appropriate. Because that's what we're asking from our dogs. So like,
yep,
we should probably be doing that ourselves.
I think it's even more important because your dogs, they live moment to moment in a way that we don't.
Right.
So when we have bad responses, it creates a loop.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's so important. I think just like not responding and not reacting in any mm-hmm. situation. I mean, for me, that was one of the hardest things.
Totally. Yeah.
And then you like go into a spiral. You're like, I should have done this. I should have done that. And then it helps because the moment's over.
Exactly. Yeah. So just to kind of like summarize those three again, it's prioritizing yourself, learning about yourself, and like being more than a dog mom. Just like, what are you more than a dog mom?
I love that. I'm going to make a great little infographic with that. I would love to talk about what you've been doing to help your community through your Dog Mom Mentality platform and your journaling. I have dropped the ball on journaling. It's something I very much recognize that like helps me. I just want to hear it all from you so I can get inspired after this to look at those prompts. So share with everyone what you've been up to.
For sure. So I realized how much help it was for me to process my emotions in some way, you know, whether it's through talking to somebody or sharing on social media or, you know, just making a voice note or journaling, like whatever it is, it can be so therapeutic and cathartic to just like get that energy out in some way. Like that's the most important thing, is that you're getting your energy out in some way. But, you know, there's a lot of things that may happen that you like don't want to tell Instagram, and like you don't want to tell a friend, or like maybe you do want to tell a friend, but they're not available right now. And so then you're just like stuck here and you're like, okay, what do I do?
Also, sometimes, like to be honest, my thoughts are embarrassing.
Right,
like,
right.
I don't want to put shame on them, but like, yeah. I don't want every single thing I feel out there for people to know.
Exactly, exactly. That's why I really enjoy journaling. So I made this journal. It's called Growing and Healing. Healing spelled H-E-E-L-I-N-G.
Yeah. Good dog puns are great.
Yes, yes. I agree. And so I made this journal. It's broken down into four different sections: an intention setting section. So, you know, how to use this journal? Why are you using it? What do you want to get out of it? Like, what kind of dog owner do you want to be? And walking you through that. And then there's a goal setting section with 6 months worth of goals. There is a wins tracker in the back because I'm all about tracking your wins and, you know, building up those small little confidence steps. Very helpful whenever you have a bad day, you can kind of go back and look at that and be like, okay, you know what? I might've had a bad day, but here's all these things that we've have accomplished. But then the beef of the journal is the actual guided journal prompts that are broken down by emotions. So I thought it was a really cool way to teach people to label the emotion that they're feeling. So all of them start off with whenever you're feeling X, and then X is frustrated, guilty, alone, unmotivated, vulnerable, brave, joyful, grateful. There's 10.
It's a mix of emotions. Like it's not just negative emotions. Like
exactly.
For your mm-hmm. good days and your proud days and your happy days.
So there's 10 pages of each emotion. So essentially like 100 journaling pages, because there's 10 different emotions, both good and bad, like you said, or both negative and positive, like you said. And so each of the prompts, there's five or six prompts for each emotion page, and they are based off of the emotion. So the prompts for frustrated is totally different than the prompts for joyful or brave. You know, even the happy ones are all different. They really work to help you process that emotion. So, you know, like with frustrated, it's, you know, all about like reorienting understanding your mindset and like figuring out what you could do next time. Is this a pattern? You know, for Joy, it's about reliving that moment and taking in all the small little pieces of it so that you can have to reminisce on. Brave, all about being proud. Like, what did you do? Like giving yourself compliments, like you're an awesome dog owner, and having that to like look back on whenever you one day have to use the guilty page. And part of that is like kind of shifting your perspective. Like if this happened to your best friend, what would you tell them? And working through it that way. So yeah, it's a really in-depth guided journal. So it's there to help you, walk you through it. Really great for new journalers, but it's one of a kind in that it's all centered around dog ownership. You know, it's all centered around your dog, but or around being a dog owner, but it's there for you. It's there to help you process your emotions as the dog owner. And it's not for just reactive dog owners. You know, so many of the journal prompts could be applicable for if you have a senior dog, or if you are into dog sports and you had a really hard trial, or your dog is sick, or you have the puppy blues, or you're trying to integrate two dogs in the house for the first time. Like there's so many ways that this journal could be utilized. I made it because, you know, I had a reactive dog and had all these emotions, but I wanted the journal to be for any dog owner.
I love that. And like you said, dog ownership is an up and down journey. There are so many different things that can happen, and it's important to identify what's going on and process it. Right. What are your like best practices? Like if you were going through an especially difficult day or an especially good day, how would mm-hmm. you approach opening your journal up and diving in?
For this one specifically, where it is based on the emotion, I think it is really good to just like sit with yourself for a minute and figure out like what emotion it is that you're feeling or which one it relates to within the journal. But some good practices for journaling for any kind of journal, whether it's guided or just, you know, you're just kind of free writing, is to have a space that you're not going to be interrupted. That's really important because it sucks whenever you are mid flow and you are interrupted. So that even means, you know, put your dog on their bed or in their crate or whatever. Definitely uninterrupted time. Have like some comfy things around you, whether that be like a blanket or a candle or tea, just like something to like make you feel a little bit warm and fuzzy and kind of put you in the mood, I guess. I just always find that it's really helpful to have something by me whenever I'm experiencing discomfort or like experiencing uncomfortable emotions, to have something there that is like it feels like home or like it feels safe. So, you know, I always like to have my favorite blanket, which is behind me on my chair. But, you know, I'm always like, I always have it right there with me because it's kind of just like that safety, literally safety blanket. But yeah, I think those are two really important pieces, but also just like, this is for yourself. So like, you don't have to fake anything while you journal. Like you aren't going to be made to show this to the world or anybody. So like, get out what you need to get out. Like if you need to call somebody a mean name just to like, you know, help you process your feelings, or you need to just like say like today was shitty, or write the F word a bunch of times. I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss on here. I guess I am because you've said post. Yes. But if you need to write like fuck like 1,000 times, then like go for it. Like this is for you. Like if you don't do it, like you're doing it for yourself and like you're not scared to put whatever on that piece of paper, then like you're probably not going to process everything completely because you're holding back.
Yeah. And kind of like we were discussing earlier, you know, a big part of you learning your own personal journey is being honest with yourself and right. not just burying those emotions. And mm-hmm. that's what journaling is meant to do. I don't know. I feel like my peak journaling time was like when I was like 13. I journaled every single day.
And oh my gosh.
I read those. Holy crap. I felt every emotion under the sun. Like I was in love one day and I hated them one the next day. My teacher was annoying and my friend betrayed me over like you know, the stupidest thing. Like everything was so extreme, but I loved talking to my diary about it.
That's
and
funny.
I feel like as adults, you just don't, I don't know why we like learn to stop doing that.
Yeah, it's funny because it's kind of like the opposite for me because I did not have a diary. I did not journal growing up. I've also like came to this realization here recently that I like didn't really allow myself a lot of like time to just sit and be and enjoy being like a kid or a teenager.
Yeah.
A lot of people talk about, you know, I read this book in high school and I watched this TV show or whatever. And I'm like, you know what? I like never really did sit down and just like read a book or watch TV in high school. Like I was always doing something, like whether it be dance practice or studying. I feel like now as an adult, I have more time to just like be and like enjoy or just like sit and relax or do things for myself. And it's like this weird feeling because I did not grow up being like that. And so now it's like, I have to tell myself like, it is okay to just like sit down and read a book. And it kind of goes back to finding that balance. But, you know, I was really thinking about it the other day because I've started getting into reading and I was like, I kind of enjoy reading. And I was like, why did I never do this growing up? And I was like, oh, it was probably because like, I literally just did not have time or give myself time to do it. I was always doing something.
100 I think a lot of adults live will continue that pattern and just become overbooked adults, you know, always wanting to fill their time, doing a whole bunch of things. Obviously, a lot of corporate structures encourage that. Like you're literally just like, okay, working into the night, whatever.
Right.
And I think these self-care practices that like are a little uncomfortable versus like my, I feel like my thing is like, I'm just going to watch TV and zone out. And sometimes I think that's self-care. And I think, you know, obviously balance, it's important to lay and watch TV. There, you know, there's a limit where eventually you are just like, my brain is rotting and I don't feel like I've actually like understood anything that's like happened in my day or like whatever. And I just think journaling is a really good way to do that, especially journaling on a good day versus like only doing it when you're stressed.
Right. I think a lot of people, like their journaling practice sometimes is just like writing down things that they're grateful for. And like even something as simple as that can get you into the practice and get you a little bit more comfortable with like writing stuff about yourself.
Or use your prompts, which is, that's why I love prompted responses. You're like, I don't have to come up with anything.
Right.
I just have to answer these questions.
Yep, exactly.
I love your t-shirts, by the way. Every time I wear them, I get so many compliments from like non-dog people. I wear the bad dog mom at the gym and everyone laughs. And I also just, the boundaries one is just universal. It's not even a dog shirt anymore.
Exactly.
It's like, and you have the like physical journal, but then you also have some online versions, right?
Yeah. I have like an ebook so you can download it for your iPad or any kind of like tablet device to write on. I mean, if you wanted to download it for your computer, you could do that too. And like, you know, type out your responses or print it if you wanted to. But yeah, it was really made for like an iPad tablet type of thing.
Thank you, Caroline. This was such a great chat. I feel like we, like you kind of said, like we just covered everything that I feel like people get from your channel. And it's always a good reminder just to like take it easy and let your dog be a dog sometimes.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. And I would love to give you and the listeners a code to use on the website. So if you wanted to get a journal or a shirt or anything, so that code will be RDL10. So RDL10, and that'll just stay active for the forever in time. So yeah, that'll be good on my website. And then are wanting to do any kind of international shipping, you can email me at caroline@dogmommentality.com and I can give you the manufacturer email. So it's a little bit cheaper for shipping to go through the manufacturer. If you're out of the United States, it's just like a normal shipping cost, you know, like your $5 standard instead of like $25 from the US.
That's awesome. Most of my listeners will be in Canada, so that'll be really helpful. So why don't we share for everyone to find everything you have to offer, great t-shirts, stickers, journals, all the like, your website and your social media handles.
all dog mom mentality, all across social media. Podcast is Dog Mom Mentality. Website's dogmommentality.com. So yep, all across the board.
Easy peasy. Thanks so much for taking the time today. And thanks for sharing with my listeners some amazing insights.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Rescue Dog Love is a project by Yamini Cohen, inspired by her rescue dog boss, who you can find on Instagram with his doggy sibling Queenie at Queenie and Boss. To keep up with the Rescue Dog Love podcast, you can follow us at rescuedoglove.com or at Rescue Dog Love Pod on Instagram. See you next time.